Barry, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us here on
Thanks,
the Daily
Program.
Now, the New South Wales Minister for Education, Adrian Piccolo, he has stated that Australia could make teacher education more selective if it reduced the oversupply of graduates. Now, my impression was at times the education system has had the reverse problem. It has struggled for enough teachers to fill roles. So what is your take on this? Do we have an oversupply?
We have an oversupply of primary teachers. Mm-hmm. We have an undersupply of specialist secondary teachers in areas like mathematics and so on. But you're right that in the past, we used to fly plane loads of teachers in from Canada and the US at one point, but that's a long time ago, when we had teachers drawn from the low birth years teaching a rapidly growing population of students in schools. The problem at the moment is we train more than we need.
So looking at more selective training, how would we actually go about that? Because it intrigues me. A lot of the judgments on teaching is obviously being made through grading systems. Is that the only way to really be assessing teachers' role, how well they're performing their role?
No, it's not the only one, but it's one important signal that people use as an indication of the restrictiveness and, in some sense, the prestige of a profession. Well, there's a perverse incentive that was introduced into the system when the Commonwealth uncapped places in higher education. Now, they did it for good reason. They did it to try and increase the proportion of the population going to university. But many universities saw teacher education as a relatively cheap course to provide in the way they choose to provide it, and increased their enrollments in that field and drew in even more students. And some of them with quite low ATARs. More than half the students now are below 70. Entering into undergraduate teacher education courses. Whereas if you go to Finland, I was talking to one of the dean at the University of Vascula, and they have around 2,000 applicants for 80 to 90 places in their teacher education program. And they end up having a more selective entry into teaching than into medicine.
You know, that's quite intriguing in itself, because when you look at somebody entering into a medical degree, obviously their ATAR plays a great deal of that, but there is also an interview process. There's a process that they have to go through in order to prove that they are essentially serious about pursuing a kind of education in medicine. Looking at teaching and looking at the ATAR system that we have here in Australia, there has been arguments that the ATAR is not necessarily the be-all and end-all when it comes to whether a person is going to succeed in university. So do you think increasing the need for a high ATAR score is going to be the answer, or do we need a different process?
Well, it will ensure some intellectual rigor among the candidates, but it's not the only thing. I mean, the University of Melbourne, which has an entirely graduate program, even in preschool teacher education, early childhood teacher education program, you've got to have another degree before you can enter it, and you do a two-year master's of teaching. The entry is based not only on the student's ATAR, which is 3 years or more earlier, but their undergraduate performance. It's also based on interview and other things.
Now, there's a mention also of the possibility of performance pay for teachers. Well, tell us about increasing pay's benefit for teaching as a whole. Do you see performance pay as being a route we could go down in order to encourage teachers to be that much more engaged?
Well, it depends what we mean by performance pay. Performance pay that's based on some measure, for example, of how a teacher's students are performing or how much they're growing, is problematic, I think, because in schools we've got very collaborative arrangements amongst teachers. I mean, for example, if you look at NAPLAN results for a Year 3 teacher, or students in Year 3, to whom do you attribute those results? The Year 3 teacher who's had them for 4 months, the Year 2 teacher, the Year 1 teacher, the preschool teacher, and so on. So I think performance-based pay, if that's what's meant, is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other ways to do it. If you think about what happened in nursing, we used to have nurses do all sorts of things, including managing bedpans, turning people in bed, and so on. And now we've differentiated that profession. We have nurses' aides, we have enrolled nurses, we have high-level professional nurses who have, to some extent, even begun to do things that used to be the exclusive preserve of doctors. Now, if we applied that approach to teaching and said, let's have teachers do only the work that you need the professional qualification of a teacher to do, and let's have a group of paraprofessionals who work with teachers in schools to do other things. Now, that's what the Blair government did in Britain, and there are now in Britain, in primary schools, more paraprofessionals than there are teachers. So the whole purpose of thinking down this path is, if you, in some sense, then reduce the number of professional teachers, you've got a capacity to increase their salary. But the problem at the moment is, teachers commence on a reasonable salary when they graduate, but if they stay in the classroom, their maximum salary by the time they complete their career is only 1.4 times their starting salary, not even double.
So the
problem is it's such a big workforce, it's very difficult to raise salaries in a way that people might want to when they say, let's raise the status of teachers, let's raise their salaries. Mm. You've got to be realistic about that and say, well, what would be the cost? Well, the cost would be different if we differentiated the workforce.
Mm. So splitting up these different roles into a series of paraprofessionals who would actually be operating on different sort of standards.
Yep.
Excellent. Just perhaps as a final point, because we are seeing this discussion around NAPLAN test scores and the like, and this being used, you just mentioned there, as something of a watermark for teachers' performance, although who we can put that down to, we're not quite sure. NAPLAN results are stagnating at the moment, and a lot of people are concerned about the fact that we see sort of scores either not going anywhere or, in fact, going down. Is NAPLAN really the best system, though, for judging this kind of performance, or do we perhaps need to look at reforming that before we reform teachers' roles?
Well, you have to think about how much testing you want to do. NAPLAN was introduced, or the precursors of it, actually. The first was in New South Wales in 1989, to test students' literacy and numeracy in order to give parents a report that was informed by a broader view of things than just their own local school. Because if teachers have been in a school for a long time, they know who's doing well in their class and who's not doing well. But what they don't know is how that compares with students in other schools. And one of the things that the introduction of the My School website showed was that there were schools that were doing extremely well. There were some doing badly, of course, but there were students that I always like to concentrate on this one. I know of a school, I know of many, but I know of one particular one, doing very well, well above the national average, very privileged kids, government primary school, not a private high-fee-paying school, that was very comfortable about itself. What the My School site showed was that compared with other schools with students from similar social backgrounds, it was almost at the bottom of the pile. Mm. So it was coasting, comfortable but coasting. And it utterly transformed itself in a couple of years in response to that information. Now, what else might we test? I think there are other things it's important to know, but it's enough to know how the system's doing, not just how every student is doing for reporting to parents. Let the schools report on science and on other areas, but we could monitor at the state and national level just with a sample of students. And we do that at the moment just with science, with ICT competence, and with civics and citizenship, but we could do it with history and other things that are new in the Australian curriculum, and see how the system is going. I often say one thing politicians know is you don't need to ask everyone to know what everyone thinks.
Mm.
So if you've got a well-constructed sample, you can establish quite clearly how the various states and territories are going and how the nation as a whole is going.
Mm. Well, Barry, do appreciate your time. Do appreciate your insight into this. Obviously, very important topic to be talking about. Do appreciate your time.
Thank you.